there's definitely legitimate people, very smart people that are very concerned for like real reasons, you know, like even if it's a small percentage of it happening, like, you know, people should be very concerned. There's also like, you know, to be honest, financial reasons for people to claim these sort of things. So if, you know, if I work for an AI company and people think that AI is so powerful that it could destroy the world or whatever, that's like kind of good hype building for my own system.
Clickbait.
Yeah, exactly. People think that ChatGPT is more like better than it is because of the fears around it, I think.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Found Generation, a self-improvement podcast, where on every episode, me and my guests try to answer this most important question. What does it mean to live a meaningful life, or what does it take to extract the most out of our lives? And you just heard the voice of Colby Banbury. He is a student researcher for Google, formerly an intern at Apple, and he's also pursuing his PhD at Harvard University. So we are dealing with a very smart man here. He is also the roommate of my absolute best friend in the world, Ben Simpson. And so Colby is a guy that I've spent lots of time with over the past 4 or 5 years. Can honestly say he is one of the nicest, most genuine, kind-hearted men that I've ever spent any time around. He's also one of the smartest, if not the smartest. And the conversation that we're going to have on today's episode is about artificial intelligence, which is something that has kind of been the buzz term of 2023. It's something that a lot of us are thinking about. There's a lot of misconceptions out about AI. And I think for us, as we move forward in our lives, AI is going to be something that we incorporate into our lives, whether we like it or not. A lot of you are using it without even realizing that you're using it. So it's something that is going to come and define this found generation. So I think it's important that we get educated on it. And when I think about the guy that I want to speak to about this very subject matter, well, Colby was a shoo-in, the first guy that came to my mind when I wanted to talk about AI. So I hope you enjoy this episode. It's a really good conversation. We get into what is AI, how is it going to affect us on a day-to-day basis, the good, the bad, and the ugly, of which you've probably heard and read a lot of the headlines about the ugly and the downsides. We're going to get into all of that. We're also going to talk about just the role of technology in our lives. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Colby. We had it in Boston. I enjoyed taking the found generation on the road. I hope you get something meaningful from this. I know I certainly did, but without further ado, here's my conversation with Colby Banbury. I hope you enjoy it. Colby, I had to ask ChatGPT a question about how to start off this podcast. There's many different directions we could go. This is what I told ChatGPT. I said, "Hi, I'm hosting a podcast with a researcher from Google. We are going to talk about AI. What do you suggest I ask him?" ChatGPT says I should ask you, "Can you briefly introduce yourself and your title at Google, along with your involvement in AI research?"
That's excellent, ChatGPT. Thanks for the question. I'm Colby. I'm a student researcher at Google. So that means that I'm a part-time research scientist for them. I'm specifically working on bringing AI stuff like ChatGPT onto like mobile phones. So like I do efficiency research because, you know, a lot of these big models use an enormous amount of money and energy and whatnot to run the stuff. I work on getting that smaller. And then the other half of the time, I'm a PhD student at Harvard, researching the same stuff. And that's sort of my background.
It's not a bad little resume you've built for yourself. You were also an intern at Apple as well, which is pretty interesting to me because in my field in podcasting, I worked at ESPN, now work at Spotify, two giants of their respective industries, and you're kind of doing the same. I'm curious, what has it been like to have worked and currently work for companies that are at the forefront of not only technology, but of the future? AI is the talk of the year. It's probably the most Google term in 2023 is my guess. Everything that you're doing and working on and researching will come to define the rest of our lifetimes.
Well, that's the hope. But I mean, I think there's a lot of folks working on it. You know, the thing about it being a big wave is that, you know, I'm one of millions working on this sort of stuff. But it is very interesting. And it's a nice time to be sort of on the research side specifically, because it's so new. It's like just taking the turn from purely like in labs to like out in the world. So there's a lot of potential impact, which is, you know, the reason I got into this job in the first place is just it's, you know, a potentially higher leveraged type of job where you can have a larger impact on people's lives. You know, if I was purely financially motivated, there's no reason to do a PhD. There's no reason to do all this. It's just go and be, a software developer somewhere, or, you know, like get the money quickly. It's just a much more fun type of job. You know, specifically around the big companies, it's very interesting because I think, you know, typically in like a technological revolution or when we switch from one thing to another, there's like a big upheaval of like the big players. And we've seen that a little bit with like OpenAI and ChatGPT sort of rising to, you know, the public consciousness. But what's interesting about this shift is that it really benefits the incumbents a lot, because the coin of the AI age is data and compute power. And that's really concentrated in the Googles and the Apples and whatnots of the world. I guess I'll say Apple is a very different AI player in that they're not going for, you know, the big fish of like your sort of general intelligence, something that could like, you know, solve a generic problem. They're much more concerned about like personal features like health tracking or whatnot using AI. So like, how do you, with the Apple Watch, like, you know, determine your heart rate better or whatnot? Which is much more in line with their value add to their customers, which is like, you know, products that people like, rather than trying to like sort of redefine stuff. So that the AI focuses of Apple typically are quite different.
So what exactly do you hope to accomplish in this space?
I mean, I think first and foremost, my goal is to have a meaningful contribution to something that like even slightly improves the lives of like a large number of people. And so that could just be, you know, a fun new feature that people like to show each other on the phone would be like enough for me at this point in the career, like to have any impact on people's lives. I think long term, I'd much rather have like a real impact on the world rather than just like a sort of fun new toy that people can play with. I mean, I think AI is potentially extremely useful for, I guess, you know, two things that we're facing right now. There's a lot of AI applications in climate change that I'm very fascinated about, specifically on like tracking emissions, which I think is an important part of like combating climate change, is like actually knowing who's contributing to it. And then the other thing is just that there's a bit of a population crunch in the Western world, and that like, you know, if you take a look at a lot of countries, the birth rate is below replacement. And that means that eventually we'll not have like enough young people to basically support old people or the economy or whatever. And so you really need to start having like a force multiplier on like the young people we do have. So like for us, like we basically need to do the job of like, you know, five people a generation ago, and it needs to keep happening. And so having that productivity bump is not just like, we make more money. It's just like the system works based on growth. And if we don't have the growth in terms of people anymore, so we need the growth in terms of like leverage, basically.
Oh, wow. That's an angle to the AI revolution that I haven't heard about yet, about population. That's really interesting. I'm an optimistic person. I want to focus on the good. We'll certainly get to the bad and all the negative connotations that there are with artificial intelligence in a couple minutes, but I want to focus on the good. What is the short-term benefits of AI becoming more and more part of the norm? How in our everyday lives will its presence and continued refinement benefit us?
That's a good question. I think a lot of the immediate benefits are just how it, I guess there's two things. There's for the average, like, you know, white collar or creative worker, it's potentially like a, you know, like an additional coworker to rely on. So like people already use ChatGPT to, you know, help write things or make decisions or brainstorm ideas. And I think like it'll even get better in that sense. So like my primary use of AI in my own life is something called typically called GitHub Copilot is like a popular one. They have, you know, internal ones at, you know, a lot of the major tech companies where it helps you write code. And so it will like help you autocomplete stuff. And it's just, you know, a very convenient thing to, you know, be writing some code and then it just like finishes the rest for you, especially if you're not necessarily familiar with what you're doing. And those are just sort of like convenience, speed up things. I think the way in which it will be less obvious to the average person, but potentially the more impactful thing in the near term is that AI allows just, you know, computers and technology to interface with things in a less rigid way. And so, you know, now we can like have AI detect objects in pictures or, you know, more accurately hear your voice in audio or whatnot. I mean, these things are already in our lives and we're not, you know, used to calling them AI, but like, you know, as much as people don't love Siri or Google Assistant as useful, you know, the audio transcript that it creates is like pretty decent and is getting substantially better. Translation is all AI, like all these sort of things that are more fuzzy human things, like our human perceptions of hearing, seeing, whatnot. Those are done with AI so that, you know, we can automate these things that would typically be need to have a person. And so it's where the sort of hard ones and zeros of technology sort of like meets the real world and can like actually perceive and interface with it. And so I don't think that comes up as much in everyday life unless you're like really into using Siri. But it does affect a lot of how like large businesses or, you know, governments or whatnot can ingest a lot of data or whatnot. You know, saying governments makes it sound scarier, but I just right. think that like, you know, it's less a personal convenience and more of like an organizational convenience.
Yeah. So AI is a term that we've been hearing about for years. I mean, you know, obviously like you've been much more likely to hear it than the everyday person since you're working in it. It's been thrown around for a couple of years. Most of us probably haven't really thought much about it, thought it was way off into the future. But like you said, we have been using it in ways without even really realizing it. Like my Amazon Alexa, for example, is a form of artificial intelligence. I'm curious to know, when did it kind of kick into hyperdrive? Because I feel like there's, you know, it was steady growth. And then just like the curve just shot up in the last year or two. What do you attribute that to? Is that a COVID thing? Is that something else?
Yeah, I think so the interesting thing is that I've said like, oh, we're really on the like, you know, exponential growth curve of AI, like 4 or 5 times in the last 4 or 5 years, because we've had like, you know, spurts of extreme growth. So on the research side, like things really kicked off more in like 2012 or whatever of like AI was suddenly solving problems that were like typically extremely hard to solve. This was sort of like mostly on like the image recognition or the language translation side. And so on the research side, we've seen dramatic improvements in technology, like more so than, you know, fields are used to seeing in decades. We'll see over like a couple years because of AI. So everyone's like, ah, like this is the AI explosion, like who's like in the research side. So we've had this increase for a while. I think we've had even more like dramatic increases recently with like the large language model stuff, which is the ChatGPTs and whatnot. We've seen really recent explosions, which are mostly attributable to resources, basically. So like the major difference between previous generations of GPT and the one that got into ChatGPT and then GPT-4 is just scale. How much data and how much processing went into creating it is like the major difference. And that comes down to mostly a commitment to scaling, which is something that's like a more recent idea. And then also just the finances, like it's an enormous cost and will continue to be an enormous cost for these companies, but it's, you know, becoming useful. I will say though, that like the thing that I like to point out to people, especially who are nervous about how quickly things are moving, is that they are moving extremely fast, especially even on the research side. But I'd say that we aren't observing like as dramatic of an increase in how capable these systems are. We're more so, we just got over the threshold of them being useful. And so now they're everywhere. But it's like, small improvements in quality can make it just good enough to be useful. And then all of a sudden everyone's using it. So, you know, the improvement from, you know, pre ChatGPT to ChatGPT of these like sort of chatbots that you talk to was significant. Like it's a major jump, but it was a huge increase in how useful they are just because it like barely got over that barrier of like, you know, I'm talking to something that can actually like respond in a useful way. So I think like, I wouldn't, you know, for people on the outside, I wouldn't like extrapolate too heavily that like, you know, in 2 years, everything is going to be, you know, totally automated because look how quickly ChatGPT caught on. It's like, you know, it's the virality of these things is like, you know, typical of like Facebook or whatever, you know, like these sort of like other things that weren't like incredible jumps in technology, but rather just have like the network effect of users. But yeah, I mean, you know, I would still say that we're in an unprecedentedly quick development cycle on like the research side. Like things are getting better than I think people are used to. You know, I say that as a fairly new researcher, so I'm not as used to the previous domain, but that, you know, that's what I've heard from people with a lot of experience. But yeah, so I just, you know, we're not going to Mars anytime soon. You know, we're not, in my opinion. Yeah, exactly. And I don't think we're reaching like, you know, super intelligence or Skynet or anything like that, even remotely quickly. That's my personal opinion. I think it's more so just that things are finally useful and that catches on much faster than people realize.
Which sector of everyday life do you think this will serve the greatest good for? I've heard a lot about the health industry. Oh, maybe this is the thing that solves cancer. Does it help the business industry? Does it help the pharmaceutical industry? Like, what do you think?
That's a good question. So I think it's, you know, it, as much as it would be hard to attribute like, you know, the internet age or, you know, the personal computer age to a single industry, like, I think it might be fairly ubiquitous. I'm sure some will see much larger benefits than others. I mean, already there's industries that benefit much more from this. So, you know, everyone was predicting that self-driving cars, for example, would be on the roads by now. But that's like a very difficult problem, it turns out, because it's, you know, you can't get something wrong. Like safety critical is like, you know, the utmost importance there. And it turns out there's a lot of possible things that could go wrong. It's like a long tail heavy problem is what they call it, meaning that like there's a bunch of random stuff that could happen on the road that's hard to predict, that, you know, something's never seen before. So that type of problem, as impactful as it is very hard to solve. But something like, you know, helping you write an email or whatever with ChatGPT is very easy, because if it gets something wrong, people aren't really that concerned. And, you know, people's language is pretty typical. So the stuff that is pretty benign, I think will get very rapidly revolutionized. So I think a lot of like the writing that people do on, you know, in their jobs and whatnot is pretty, you know, rote. Like it's just sort of, you know, repeating the same niceties or whatever. And a lot of that could be automated if we want it to be. But yeah, safety critical stuff or things that like are not as data heavy currently are like much harder to automate. And so like, yeah, I, you know, you'd have to be an expert in the field to know if you're applicable. But like, you know, I don't think, I also don't think that the creative endeavors are, you know, going away or anything like that. Yeah. I think it's just going to potentially be a new set of tools.
So we're in the wild, wild west of this whole thing that's going to, you know, last for a very long time. This automation, let's get into the negatives here. Do you think that, for example, Google Maps, Apple Maps, we all use it. You could probably make the argument that a lot of us are now very directionally challenged because we rely so much on the directions to tell us where to go, that we go to the same location, we go to the gym, we go to the grocery store 10 times, and we still need to use the maps on the 11th time. We don't know how to do it ourselves. Do you think relying so heavily on artificial intelligence to do everyday things like crafting an email or helping you, you know, in school or whatever, because I know education is going to have to figure out how to incorporate this properly, not to the detriment of students. Do you think that this automation can be too much of a good thing to the point that it's bad for one's personal development?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Just because, you know, as you say, like, if you automate something, you don't get any practice of, like, you know, doing it on your own. In my own instance, like, I have terrible handwriting, and that's just because I write with a keyboard every day, all the time. And so it's just a skill that I don't practice and I don't keep up. And, you know, when it does crop up, you know, it's embarrassing how bad my handwriting is. But I think, like, you know, we're constantly changing what is a useful skill in the modern era. And I think, like, you know, some skills will be lost that we want to keep. But by and large, you know, a lot of the things that get automated and go away are, you know, going to be like horseback riding or whatnot. Like, some people still like horseback riding, but in the modern era, if you don't know how to ride a horse, it doesn't really come up. And, you know, I think the same might be said for, you know, a lot of other things, like, you know, directions or whatnot. Like, it may come up, but by and large, you know, people don't use those skills. It is concerning, though, because, you know, to take writing as an example, not necessarily handwriting, but just like crafting your own something like a story from a blank page is like a useful thinking tool. And so if we automate a lot of the, like, you know, writing in people's lives, for example, they might lose that skill of, like, generating their own ideas and whatnot. In the same sense that, like, the advent of Google at your fingertips has made it so that, you know, the memorization of facts is, like, much harder. People really don't have, like, a lot of stuff off the top of their head because they're so used to just accessing it, saying it, and forgetting it right away. And so, though, you know, in those cases, like, I think there might be a real loss. And, you know, pointing to education as well, like, you know, the essay is, like, you know, really under attack. Like, the college essay is definitely, you know, losing out right now. Like, I don't think it's too different than, like, you know, being able to, like, you know, Google the answer to a math problem or whatever. Like, it's obviously encourages cheating, but I don't think it's, like, as unheard of as, like, other forms of cheating necessarily. It was just one of the last things that we thought,
right?
You know, you could reliably catch somebody cheating, and now you cannot reliably catch somebody cheating. But yeah, I just encourage people that, like, even if something becomes convenient, like, don't give up on the prior thing, because there's reasons to do stuff more manually or more intentionally, yeah, beyond just, like, the thing you get out at the end,
right?
Especially writing. Like, I you know, find most of my ideas come from trying to, like, put them into words.
Yeah. So my dad, I was traveling London with him recently, and he read a story in the Wall Street Journal about artificial intelligence, and he was all freaking out to me, which I'm sure many of our parents are about it, because they don't quite have a grasp on it like we do. They see it as the robots are taking over, apocalypse is coming, the world is ending. Yes, we're going to train these robots to be so smart that they're just going to overtake us and kill us all. What do you say to the people in your life who might come to you with that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely dangers to AI, but not in the, you know, kill us all, take over the world sort of thing. I think it's just more that the more things that get automated, the, you know, the more, like, accidental bugs can have, like, big impacts on the world. You know, we see that in the modern day with, like, if financial systems get hacked, or if, you know, if the power goes out, it's a much bigger deal because we rely on the power a lot. Like, you know, the more you put a lot of value and focus on specific systems, if they ever fail, it's bad. So, like, you know, in AI systems, if they, you know, have biases, or if they get things wrong or whatnot, if we're too reliant on them, like, they could turn negative outcomes. I do think that, you know, on the what's called, like, the existential worry side, you know, like, AI systems destroying humanity or causing wars or whatever, there are like smart people that are concerned about it, like researchers that I respect and whatnot. But I think they're, in my opinion, they're extrapolating, you know, growth curves, you know, out beyond what is reasonable. I mean, we've not really seen true exponential growth in any single technology for very long. And, you know, we're extrapolating dramatic exponential growth over many years. And it's like, ah, then the AI is going to take over or whatever. It's, I don't think it's as realistic of a concern. But I do think that like we know very little about what makes human intelligence what it is. And so, you know, we're kind of in uncharted territory in that sense. Like, you know, we don't know why we're smart, or we don't really know what makes us tick at a, you know, a fundamental level. And so it could be as simple as, you know, a bunch of like, you know, AI is essentially just like slightly updating a bunch of numbers and then multiplying them together. And then you just use the output. Like it's just a bunch of matrix multiplication by and large. But it could be that, you know, the secret of intelligence is as simple as that. It's just in terms of scale and time and, you know, the amount of feedback that you get from your environment. But I don't think we're close. And, you know, I tell people, don't worry about AI killing everybody, worry more about, you know, like fake news or biases or potentially, you know, job loss faster than we can retrain or whatever. And, you know, I think it's not bad for the top people in AI. Like you see, you know, your Sam Altman's talking about these sort of existential problems. It's not bad for them to bring it up. Because I think, you know, you want the top people to be worried about the absolute worst case scenario. But I really don't think it's any concern for anybody realistically. I mean, far less than the other existential problems of like nuclear war or climate change or whatnot.
Right. That's actually like, I've been drawing these comparisons in my mind back to kind of like the 1940s, the race for the atomic bomb. If this power gets into the wrong hands to someone who's deranged enough, think Hitler then, think Putin now, or the crazy people that are always coming on North Korea, if this gets in the wrong hands, serious destruction could be done, whether that's in the physical world or on the online world.
Yeah, I mean, I think the online world is more ripe for disruption in this sense, because, you know, already so much of what we rely on as like evidence that someone is a human being is like whether they sort of speak like a human, or like, you know, write like a human. And that's now sort of no longer a good criteria for determining if someone's a human. Like, you know, Twitter bots or whatever used to be easy to catch because they just, you know, repeat the same thing or whatever. And now, you know, they can have a unique sentence every time they do it. So the online world's pretty ripe for disruption in that sense, from like bad actors using AI systems. Like, I don't think that the AI that we have now, like, so I guess I'd break this into two things. Like, there's definitely like applications where AI could be used to make better weapons, and in the wrong hands, that's definitely very dangerous. But, you know, no more so, I think, than, you know, F-16s or any other piece of technology. And, you know, AI is not easier. Like, truly advanced AI is not like cheaper or easier to get than building an F-16 or something. Like, it's an enormous amount of money. And then the other thing I'll say is that if you can truly have like an AI system that is sort of generally smart and potentially even smarter than a human, which again, you know, I don't think is like a near term thing to think about, really, because I don't think we're even remotely close. Then that's like potentially dangerous, just because, like, you know, now a bad actor could like outsmart you, sort of thing. But yeah, again, I don't think the average person needs to worry about this. It's far less concerning than like a, you know, a nuclear war or whatever. I mean, I think bad actors can do bad things now, and this doesn't really change the narrative at all in my mind.
I'm pretty open to all of this. I'm coming back to my dad and saying, no, this is like that. what you're outlining is possible, but all the top researchers and smartest people in the world are getting paid big bucks to ensure that that doesn't happen and to use all of this as a force for good. My concern, however, is kind of on the interpersonal level. When everything is so automated, human beings are wired to do what's easy, what's convenient. We don't like to go out of our way if we don't have to. So I think about the dating world. I have heard, you know, there's also sex robots or something. I've never looked into that, but apparently that's a thing. You know, if you can have something that kind of looks like a human and talks like a human, tell you that they love you and how amazing you are and hype you up, and they can satisfy you in other ways, a lot of people are going to do that, because it doesn't mean, or it means that they don't have to go out into the real world and meet a man or woman or try to make friends in your 20s, which is a difficult thing to do. Are you worried about that at all, that some people could use it too much to the point where they kind of forget what makes us human?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely concerned in the same way that you were saying, like, you know, automating can sort of remove that skill from your life. If you become overly reliant on like entertainment or conversation from something that's like truly artificial, you kind of forget what it's like to be an active member of a conversation or to like have empathy for like an actual person. I mean, I think there's a lot of folks trying to solve the problem of loneliness using like AI systems or whatnot. You know, if you are someone who, you know, for whatever reason is socially isolated, like it's probably like a net benefit in your life to have, you know, someone to talk to you, you know, and respond back in like a dynamic way. Even if that, you know, is like a ChatGPT essentially, or like an AI system. You know, there's like a startup called Character AI, which sort of focuses exactly on this sort of thing, where, you know, each AI system is supposed to have some persona and personality or whatever that you can talk to. But I think, like, you know, if you lessen the symptoms of loneliness, I think you make people less likely to pursue cures to loneliness, which is the only true cure is, you know, having a good social circle around you, having friends and, you know, real in-person engagement. So, you know, I think it's a nice idea for some folks to work on to try to make loneliness hurt less. But yeah, I agree. It'll potentially, you know, cause some people to be less uncomfortable in the state of loneliness and then stay there, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I think, you know, I wouldn't tell the people at Character AI, for example, to like stop, because I think there's, you know, there's potentially some benefits. But yeah, I mean, I think so much of technology has been social isolation, social media, dating apps, whatnot. So we, you know, this is not a reversal. It's just making it worse, probably.
I asked this question to all the people that I've had on the podcast who work in social media. Does any part of you feel any sense of guilt for working in this industry that does have so many benefits to it, whereas there's great benefits to social media as well? I, for one, love hanging out on social media and love connecting with people that I otherwise wouldn't have the chance to. It's a great way to stay in touch with people and connect with people from all over the world. But obviously we know about all of the bad that comes with social media, the addiction, the isolation, the comparison traps, and we know all about the harms that it's had on young people, especially kind of young women. There's also so much harm that's come with AI, as we've laid out. Does any part of you feel a bit guilty about that?
I mean, I'd feel a bit more guilty if I'd have had a larger impact on it. Yeah. I mean, I am obviously working on these things, there. But I would say hopefully, but I guess in this context, that sounds wrong. But no, I mean, you know, it's very easy to feel like a small part. I mean, I truly am a small part, but I think everybody feels like a small part in any, you know, big shifts in, you know, technology or the future society or whatnot. So it's easy to like avoid guilt in that sense, to be like, I was just a drop in the bucket. I would say though that like I'm a bit of a progress optimist, and that like I do think, you know, in general, technological, social progress is beneficial, and there are definitely negative outcomes, but you know, people typically live better lives, you know, now than they did before, and will, you know, 10 years in the future than they do now. I mean, with, you know, accounting for fluctuations based on like, you know, current stuff. And so I really think that technology is not only, you know, generally a better thing for humanity, but also that we sort of need to innovate a way out of some current problems. You know, climate change is like a big existential problem, but I also, you know, I mentioned before, but like, you know, the world economy, you know, economics as we understand it is built on constant growth. You know, it, we assume that like stock prices will in general go up, you know, housing prices will generally go up. If there was just, you know, no economic growth, and in fact, like since, you know, the population of the earth will potentially hit a cap at some point, like let's say we make it to 10 billion, like we may not make it to 11, we may start going down based on like, you know, typical trends, like that might just unravel the way that the modern world works. But if we just continually innovate and just, you know, every one person can now, you know, be as productive as 10 people were 30 years ago, you sort of continue this trend that is, you know, maybe dangerous long term, like to just constantly grow. But I think like, you know, AI is very important in that sense. Like, I think we do want to keep being more productive, keep the economy growing, because eventually we get to a point where we're just fully, you know, post scarcity, where like people can live the lives they want to and not necessarily have to worry about like contributing to the economy or to society, because we're, you know, we're in like a Star Trek universe where like, you know, we have all the food and all the whatever housing, whatever we need, and so we can pursue other pursuits. So that's like the really high-minded idea, is that like, you know, all this is hopefully in service of like a better society where we're not, you know, all cutthroat for the same resources. There's, you know, plenty to go around. So I think that's just the sort of macro trend that I see in this, and I think AI is like a big step in that direction. Yeah. And there's going to be, like with anything, probably temporary issues. Like I think, for example, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, like one of the near term disruptions is probably going to be in the creative world, just because it's going to be easier to like commoditize entertainment. Like if you can automatically generate a story and a voice to say that story, and a person, like a video of like what seems like a person saying that story or acting it out or whatnot, you know, all things that are possible now but kind of crappy, but will get better. You know, that's, I don't think that is going to be better than human creativity anytime soon, but it does price out a lot of human creativity.
I have found myself wondering about that. You know, I just released my first book, which I see that you have a copy of it. Thank you for getting it. I do wonder about like, wait, so now can just anyone write a book because they have some AI that's helping them do it, whereas they might not otherwise be qualified to do it. Then I think about in the podcasting world as well. I don't know if you saw this, but there were clips of, I think the most listened, I don't know if this is a fact, but I would guess it's a fact, the most listened to podcast of all time is the conversation between Joe Rogan and Elon Musk for maybe 2018 or something. And someone made an AI version of that conversation, looked and sounded exactly like them, and made them sound like the content of things that they were saying made total sense for the individuals. And so I wonder about that, because there already are AI podcasts that are conversations not being had by actual humans. So I do wonder on the consumer side of it, is that something that we want? The information, if me and you were AI right now and we're having the exact same conversation that real me and real you are having, does the consumer care about that? I'm the consumer. If I'm the consumer,
Now, again, I'm very biased, so I'd be curious to know what the everyday person feels, but I wouldn't be as interested in that because I know it's not a human. If I'm aware that it's not a human, I feel like that would be a turnoff to me, but I don't know.
Yeah. I've definitely thought about this. I think like, you know, entertainment just as like a sort of simple thing, you know, I think people will want the AI version of, because it'll be, you know, in the same way that people talk about how the TikTok algorithm is serving them so well, like, oh, it knows me so well or whatever. Like, you know, that's an AI system basically matching you with the piece of content that you turns out you like, you know, based on the feedback you give it in the app, the subtle feedback. But if it can, you know, right now it just has to match. But if in theory it could create the content on the other side, it could be even more tailored to you in like a very precise way. And so I think that like very customized stuff is going to be, you know, I think like the type of content you see on TikTok, which is like it, by and large, just like in my opinion, as someone who's not a huge consumer of it, like entertainment that's just like, you know, firing neurons in your brain, but not really like teaching you much new, not to, you know, write off like all of TikTok or whatever. There's obviously some great stuff there. But I think a lot of the just like base level entertainment is going to get way better and be very hard to compete with. And we might have like a problem with like, you know, even more content addiction. But I think like, you know, in the podcast setting or whatever, like, you know, I don't necessarily think it would, like in the Joe Rogan example that you brought up, like if you resonated with something that like fake Joe Rogan said, like it could still be powerful, and probably it was written by somebody on the back end. So like they were still giving their unique perspective. But when things are like written by an AI and like, you know, performed by an AI or whatever, you're basically just talking to like the average person. You know, AIs are trained on all the information it can find on the internet. And so you're not really getting a unique perspective. You're kind of just getting a sort of blended perspective of like, you know, billions of people, which is interesting in its own right for sure. But like, I think when people love artists or they love, you know, podcasters or just any creator, they're really looking for the unique human perspective that they have. You know, if they just want facts or if they just want, you know, the average opinion, that's much easier to come by. But the truly like, you know, prominent people are the ones with like unique perspectives. And so I think that doesn't, it's far harder. And I won't, you know, say anything's impossible, but it's far harder to replicate unique perspective with like something that's inherently trained on billions of people or whatever. But I would say like, you know, if in the future, you know, you're well known for your unique perspective, you are currently seeding the next generation. You could create an AI bot based on, you know, all the conversations you've already had on your podcast or all your writing or your book or whatnot. But then it would probably just spit back what old you thought and not what, you know, tomorrow's you might think, which is like ideally a new, you know, not just an average of whatever you thought before, but more so, you know, a unique thought based on your own experiences and whatnot.
I am really curious to see what happens with the already creatively talented and then using AI to further enhance their talents. Like, I'm really interested to see in the music space, specifically people who use AI to enhance their already cool voice or their already, you know, the instruments that are playing and all the AI music that you can make. Music's going to change big time, I think, for the better. So I'm really curious to see how it evolves in that space. I did want to ask you this. There's a podcast out there. It's one of my favorites going right now, The Diary of a CEO. Go check it out. And Stephen Bartlett, the host, who's kind of like the British Gary Vaynerchuk, had on a couple of AI people. Most recently had Mustafa Suleiman on, and then he's also had Mo Gadot on, who I understand to be very big players in the tech world. And they're both sounding the alarm bells on it. I think Mo, you know, is basically like lobbying the governments to lobby sanctions against the companies that are working on this stuff. And he's sounding the alarm bells. When you hear about such high up people, some of the smartest people in the world, that are leaving the industry and saying that this is all doomsday stuff. What does that make you feel?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there are certainly people that are sounding the alarm and, you know, simultaneously leaving and not contributing. But I think the people that, there are a lot of people that are espousing concerns about, you know, this technology that are simultaneously pushing the forefront. And I like that perspective potentially the most, because I think like concerns about the future and, you know, trying to do things responsibly is, you know, the best way to go forward. But no, I'm kind of the opinion that it doesn't really help to just stop or like to just, you know, try to put the genie back in the bottle, so to speak. You know, if we, you know, midway through the Manhattan Project, which has come up a lot, partially because of Oppenheimer, partially because, you know, it's like a recent bit of technology that caused existential concerns. Midway through the Manhattan Project, I don't think they really had like the choice to stop. Even if they knew that this was like potentially a big problem, you know, the science was well known enough that it was like doable. And so there's sort of this like eventuality of like technology. I think that like if people realize how to do it, you know, there are enough people in the world that could, that like, you know, someone might eventually do it. So I think it's much better to push forward with the concerns at the forefront of your mind and try to like develop it in a way that is like very responsible. So, you know, the people leaving entirely, I think, potentially make less of a contribution towards solving things than, you know, they do by just lobbying stuff. Also add just like as a the sort of cynical perspective that's been passed around the ML community of folks expressing existential concerns like AI, you know, might take over the world sort of thing, is that, you know, there's definitely legitimate people, very smart people that are very concerned for like real reasons, you know, like even if it's a small percentage of it happening, like, you know, people should be very concerned. There's also like, you know, to be honest, financial reasons for people to claim these sort of things. So if, you know, if I work for an AI company and people think that AI is so powerful that it could destroy the world or whatever, that's like kind of good hype building for my own system.
Clickbait.
Yeah, exactly. People think that ChatGPT is more like better than it is because of the fears around it. I think, you know, it's like, oh, it's this unstoppable super intelligence. Like, you know, it can solve anything for me. Like I'm willing to pay any amount of money to get access to it because like, you know, it's clearly so powerful. I don't think it's that powerful. And I think the hype, you know, even if some of it's fearful, it, you know, contributes to like people overestimating its capabilities. And then the other thing is this idea of like regulatory capture, which, you know, I'm not an expert on, but essentially it's just, if you're already a big player, and all of a sudden there's a lot of government regulations on like how to develop stuff, the big players can afford the extra cost essentially to work with regulations, but a new startup would be stopped by regulation. You know, you see that in like the banking space, for example. Like, you know, the major banks can deal a lot more with regulators, but it's much harder to be like an upstart bank against like a big bank or whatnot. So there's some reasons for existing players to call for concerns. But I mean, I you know, that's more so just like, I wouldn't even say that's my personal opinion, but that is, you know, the skeptic's view floating around the AI community. So there's reasons to be concerned that aren't altruistic, that are like self-serving. But yeah, I also think that it's become just sort of like a meme almost, like, right. As well. So but anyway, yeah, I feel like I've mentioned many times, I'm not personally concerned.
I haven't really heard this part of the AI conversation yet. There's already such a big inequality gap in the US. Do you think this will further drive that gap between people who have access to it and those who don't?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, part of what I'm trying to do is make like the cost of running these systems less, so that it's like more accessible for others to use it. You know, if you can run if you can run like your own personal version of ChatGPT, you're not then beholden to OpenAI to like pay for them to run it for you. And so there's like a democratization of the technology that like a lot of researchers are pushing for right now to make it more accessible. But I think like with any technology that like potentially increases the, like maybe replaces, you know, work or increases the effectiveness of some people, it'll like concentrate wealth more so than the last one. You know, the Industrial Revolution concentrated wealth far more than, you know, we had ever seen previously. And the same, I think, goes for the technological revolution, the internet age or whatnot. It's like all been concentrating. And so, yeah, now we're at a point where inequality is extremely high. I think it's, you know, inequality in itself is not like some inherent bad, I think. But I do think that like we, you know, I mentioned before that like with a lot of technology, you could get the point where there's like enough for everybody in the world, like where we're less competing for resources and much more, you know, one could argue that we're maybe already there in the world, but like there's enough food to go around or whatnot. It's just, we're bad at allocating it. But like if we reach a point where like there's sort of plenty of resources in the world for people to like not necessarily have to work, you know, based on, you know, current trends, it'll be a few people will have, you know, multiple worlds worth of resources, and then most people will have very little. And that's probably bad. So like, you know, a lot of people talk about if you have automation, especially from AI, it should be like specifically taxed or whatever. You know, I think those sort of things are very heavy-handed. I just think that like, yeah, I mean, I, you know, not to get into to economic policy or whatever, but like there probably needs to be correcting forces to stop the concentration of resources, because people want to concentrate resources, and the people with a lot of resources are going to have a lot more power, and even more so in the AI world, because money in is performance and like capability out. That's actually something I didn't mention before, but like unlike previous like technological revolutions, like, you know, you could say that the computer age, like computers were definitely expensive and like, you know, it did help incumbents in some way, but like it was really a disruption that just kind of, if you spent, you know, 10x the money, you weren't necessarily getting like 10x the benefit from like using computers or software or whatnot. You know, it was very much so like based on, you know, like with social media, it was based on network effects or whatnot. Right now, it's very much like the money that you put into something, the result is much better out. So like the longer you, and with more computers, you train the next AI system, the better it's going to be, and potentially the more like money you'll get out of it. So yeah, it's, you know, money has always been an advantage, but it's an extreme advantage, yeah, in the AI world.
I say in my book that technology addiction is the most pressing issue that our generation faces right now. Obviously, you can make cases for climate change and for artificial intelligence in some ways, but I just think, like, you know, you go on the T here, so many people just face down, very unobservant to the rest of the world, and I could go on about all the detrimental things with it. But I think AI and it being more accessible and more used by the everyday folk is only going to make that technology addiction worse. You are very outdoorsy. You love exploring. You love traveling. You love kind of just getting away from all of that from time to time. How, as you only get more ingrained in this world, it becomes more a part of your life, how are you going to try to maintain that other side of you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've always been someone to push back on like the negative connotation of like people using the internet or using their phones or whatever, just because I grew up very much as like an internet kid. Like most of what I know is learned off of the internet. And I think like there are, you know, in the same way that you can read books that give you really no unique perspective or teach you nothing, or you can watch shows that give you nothing, or movies or whatnot. Like any way that you can get information, you can do it in the like pure entertainment, no learning, no like growing form. Like the internet has all the information that you could ever desire. And so you could become the most productive person by, you know, constantly being in your phone, or you could, you know, learn so much, or you could have great social interactions. I mean, I do think social interaction online is like typically not very good right now. Like it's just much better in person. Like you really don't connect with people online. But so I will push back a little bit on like people focusing more on technology in their lives, like especially young people, as being like an outright bad thing. I think it's more so just the with technology comes like convenience of entertainment. You know, if you can get the dopamine hit for no effort, then, you know, it becomes like, you know, an addictive thing, and it just becomes something that you don't need to grow for, you don't need to put in effort for. And that seems like long-term bad. You know, you just don't become like an interesting person. And I think like, you know, going outside, like hiking a mountain is like the complete opposite of that in my mind, because you don't even necessarily get like an outright dopamine hit. It's much more just the fun is in the challenge. And you just don't have that, yeah, in the modern world as much. So I think it'll always be a nice break for me to go and do something that is just, you know, difficult or type two fun, or you know, just for the act of it. But like, you know, I think keeping that in my life will mostly just be like having the time and finances to be able to keep doing that, because you know,
you'll certainly have the finances, Colby.
Yeah, but I guess the time maybe is tough. But yeah, anyway, I don't mean to derail the point to talk about how, you know, phones are actually good for people. But I just think that like it's the internet has been wrongly attributed as like the brain melter in the same way that like TV has or whatever. And I just think that you can always find, you know, your own podcast is on the internet, and people might be head down listening to it on the T,
as they should.
Yeah, as they should. But yeah, I mean, I guess how do you see that in your own life? Like, how do you manage to keep the sort of adventure as part of it? I mean, I guess, you know, adventure is now part of your your job.
yeah. So, I mean, I have to make a clear decision. Sometimes I do this tradition. I don't do it as much as I used to. I try to bring it back when I can. Screenless Saturday, where I do pretty much the entire day until I watch the UFC fights at like 7 p.m. without a screen. So I'll usually find a coffee shop in another town that I want to go to on Friday night, and I'll write down the map's directions, and I'll follow my handwritten directions, and I'll just go, and I'll handwrite, I'll read a paperback book, I'll walk around, I'll just do anything I can just to reconnect with nature, to be with my own thoughts, to be undistracted, because I do think long periods of undistracted, focused thoughts are really good. And I do think we are losing that a little bit, because, you know, the hardest thing in the world to do is to sit there in silence with your own thoughts. I think, I'm sure you've heard of this test before, and I don't know when it was done, but the psychology experiment that was like, you can either, you know, you have to sit in a room for 10 minutes alone, but if you want out, you can like get a shock administered to your hand first, and a significant percentage of the people opted for the shock after like 3 minutes. So I do think that that's a problem, that we can't enjoy stillness. Stillness is something that is very important to me. It's very grounding, and I think it ultimately makes me a better person, being able to connect with myself in that way. Self-reflection is a huge part of who I am, and I think we're losing the ability to do that, because why would you self-reflect when you can watch a cat video on TikTok?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a great point. Like just being able to like almost entertain yourself with your own thoughts sort of thing is like a weird way to say it. But like, you know, we are definitely losing the ability to like have like deep thought or have self-reflection without like stimulus that just sort of like, you know, tricks our brain into like having those thoughts. Most of my job is just kind of sitting there thinking, and you know, most of, you know, like why I like, you know, breaking free from technology when the times that I do is purely just for, you know, being able to pursue lines of thought, like about my personal life, about my work, about just like whatever thing I find interesting, just kind of on my own or having those conversations with people, without the sort of crutch that technology is, because like, you know, if you're trying to puzzle through something in your mind and you can easily just look it up, or you can easily just listen to somebody else, you know, espouse their opinion on it, then you really don't go through the exercise of like doing it yourself. And I think like, yeah, we mentioned it before, but like there's so many things that automation and ease of access just like, you know, it atrophies your mind in the same way that if you, you know, if you never walked, you only, drove a car, you just atrophy. So I think that's very valuable, but yeah, I think you can get the right kind of stimulus online, but you still need to live life without stimulus sometimes. Yeah.
Okay. So we are out of time. You've got to get back to solving all the world's problems, but I do want to say in closing, I know it's sounded like I'm, you know, sounding alarm bells or have a kind of more skeptical, view of AI. But I do think it has a lot of benefits for us in our everyday lives. I'm actively looking for ways to help it enhance my job and my workflow and get some of the more, like the tasks that don't require as much brain power, but just require time. Okay, well, can I automate that? I do want to say that through every generation, and you kind of touched on this as well, there's always something that happens technologically that the current generation is like, oh my God, the world is ending. I'm sure the farmers when the Industrial Revolution came were like, oh my God, the world is ending. This is going to be the worst thing for the economy and us as people, et cetera, et cetera. Every generation faces something like that. So artificial intelligence is probably our version of that. We're going to get through it. We're going to figure it out. There's going to be rough spots, rocky spots as well. So there's also going to be a lot of good that comes out of it. And so, I'm very curious to see what life is like in 10, 20, 30, 40 years with all of this. The world has changed so much since the Manhattan Project. I mean, if you plug someone from the 1940s, which many of them are still alive, into right now, it's like a completely different world. I feel like from that period to now is definitely one of the more significant shifts in technology in world history. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's going to be unrecognizable, but you know, I guess my main hope is that the basic stuff that we talked about is still is still around. I would hate for technology to ever wipe away the need for, you know, real human connection and like a unique perspective.
Colby, thank you for joining me, and good luck with everything that you've got going on. You've got a lot going on. I mean, Harvard, Apple, Google, it's hard to keep track of. I don't know how you do it, but thank you for joining me, for all your insights and for your friendship. I look forward to getting out in nature and not, talking to you like via robotic means.
Yeah, let's do this again while camping. Yeah. And everyone go buy Surrender. It's an excellent book.